Hello, welcome to Literally from the North Shore, and thanks for tuning in. Today we continue with KTWH volunteer Beth Alexander's reading of Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach's book, A River Through Two Harbors. This book chronicles fictional North Shore law enforcement officer Deidre Johnson, who uncovers a crime ring that is trafficking Native girls to the harbor in Duluth. This book contains mature themes and may not be appropriate for all listeners. We pick up where Beth left off last time.
I reserved a small conference room nearby. Keep going around this loop, he instructed. Go back down the hill 3 blocks and turn right. You'll find a parking lot. Deidre looked over her shoulder to see if anyone was preparing to follow them. She still couldn't believe that Gerald was legit, but she drove to where he said, and they entered a building, going down a flight of stairs to the lower level. Partway down a hall, he stopped at a door and motioned for her to enter. The room was small, containing a rectangular table and 6 chairs arranged 2 on each side and 1 on each end. Deidre sat on one of the side chairs. Gerald chose an end seat near her. From his pack, he produced a laptop computer and took a flash drive from his pocket. As the machine booted up, Gerald started to apologize again. I know I was a real jerk the last time we met. I also know what I was doing was wrong. Knew it then, too. But people change, and that was a long time ago. Well, long for me. Deidre interrupted. Look, this was a long way for me to drive to hear your apology and confession. While I appreciate your efforts, you didn't need to say that to me face to face. I took what you said over the phone to heart, and for what it's worth, I'm glad you're remorseful, and I'm happy for you that your life seems to have direction. Why all the secrecy for that? Gerald's face clouded. That's not why I called you. Please let me explain how I arrived at this place in my life. My dad insisted I follow in his footsteps and study law. He has a way of imposing his will on everyone around him. Deidre nodded in agreement, and Gerald continued. At first, I was resentful and was only going through the motions at the university. In my second semester, I was mandated to take an ethics class taught by one of the brothers. I was intrigued from day one. Never in my life had I been forced to look at the consequences of the actions of others, let alone the consequences of my own actions. I was so taken by that man's teaching that I took another of his offerings. And so here I am, a senior who's become committed to trying to make a difference in the world. I look at my father and how he takes from everyone and gives so little in return. The problem is, I see all his potential for doing good swallowed by his greed and power grabbing. Believe it or not, I want to study law, not to take, but to give. It's obvious to me that money buys privilege. I want to level the playing field. I may not be a bulldozer, but I can do what I can. That's why I called you. Deidre was baffled. It was as though Gerald had something to say, but he had to first justify why he was doing it. She was totally unprepared for what came next. I was home for Thanksgiving weekend and wanted to check my email messages. Dad had been working in his study, but said he needed to get some fresh air. In reality, I think he wanted to get out of the house when Mom and me were both home. He always seems uncomfortable around the two of us, as if he is afraid we might gang up on him and tell him to stuff his autocratic ways. Anyway, I was going to use his computer, but when I hit the space bar to bring it to life, a file was open and on the screen. He stopped and swallowed hard. Deidre waited for him to speak when he could. This is what I found. He turned the screen so she could see. Ship Esperanto, Liberian. Flag date, November 10. In date, November 12. Out order, 3. Ship Star of India. Flag date, November 20. In date, November 21. Out order, 1. Ship Moscovia, Liberian. Flag date, November 26. In date, November 29. Out order, 3. Ship Vestavius, Liberian. Flag date, December 1. In date, December 4. Out order, 4. Ship Ishat, Liberian. Flag date, December 10. In date, December 11. Out order, 2. Ship Aegean Sea, Liberian. Flag date, January 3. In date, January 5. Out order, 3. Note, Sioux locks closed shipping season over Saturday, January 11. Deidre studied the list, but it meant little to her. Do you understand what this is about? She asked Gerald. At first, it meant nothing. Dad was never interested in boat traffic, not even at the docks in two harbors. I found this strange. I know it was wrong of me, but I started to snoop around his files. He hadn't logged off, so I didn't need his password to open any of them. Gerald closed that file and opened another. I found this. Again, he turned the computer screen toward Deidre. The file was labeled Expenses. It was a spreadsheet, and the columns were headed by men's names, three of which stood out to Deidre as though they were neon signs. Billy Evers, Anthony DeMarcus, and Jason Leader. Down the left side of the spreadsheet were consecutive dates spanning 4 years. She followed the judges column down to the first entry, April 7 of 4 years previous, about the time the judges' courtroom management began to change. In the corresponding cell was the sum, $5,000. She traced her way back up the column, noting that the monetary amounts became more numerous and more generous. She noted the same pattern for the other two, except that Billy Evers' payments ended the month before he was sentenced and sent to prison. Deidre was certain this record was meaningful, but she still couldn't connect the dots. Gerald opened another file, this one marked Shipments. Again, the spreadsheet went back some 4 years. Deidre noticed that during the dead of winter, January, February, and March, no entries were made. They started again in April. Each column was headed by what appeared to be the name of a ship, and Deidre read across. She realized in an instant that some of the ship names she had seen in the first file appeared in the headings. Down the left side were dates, the same as she had seen in the previous file. This time the entries in the corresponding cells were much larger, ranging from $15,000 to $60,000. Go back to the first file. Gerald did. Deidre looked at the date, November 20, and then the order, 1. She jotted that down on a notepad. She looked at November 10. The order was 3. Return to the last file you showed me. Deidre compared what she had written to what was recorded in the cells for that date. Where the cell coordinates for Esperanto and November 10 intersected, the figure $60,000 was entered. Where Star of India intersected November 20, the cell contained $20,000. What do you think of these figures? Deidre asked, looking at Gerald for a clue as to what he was thinking. His brow furrowed. What do you think? He answered her question with a question. Deidre thought for a moment before answering. I think the orders filled refer to human beings, women. The going rate is $20,000 per individual, and they're delivered to the various boats docked in Duluth. There is absolutely no evidence to base my suspicion on from what I see here, but something inside me says this is what the payments are about. You tell me what you think. Gerald closed the file and opened another. This was not a spreadsheet. Instead, it was a picture folder. Gerald opened the first frame, and the images of a young girl filled the screen. There was a headshot, another of her partially clothed and sitting in a chair, and the third was a far more explicit frontal shot. He screened through photo after photo until Deidre shouted, "Stop!" Gerald paused the rolling pictures. Deidre gasped. On the screen was a picture of Anna, stripped naked. "My God, what have you discovered?" she asked, not needing an answer. Under the picture was a notation. Ishat, December 10, 6 a.m. "Gerald, do you know what you've uncovered?" she asked, still not believing what she was seeing. "My father is a human trafficker. That's what I've uncovered. We never got along, but I never thought he was an animal until now. I want to see him out of my life and my mother's life as quickly as possible. He has taken the spark from Mom, and now he is responsible for the ruination of the lives of how many innocent people. He doesn't deserve to be called human." Deidre was stunned by his outburst. "I'm so sorry you had to find this, but I'm also grateful you did. And I applaud your remarkable sense of rightness and your calling me. That was an act of true courage. What you have here is so incriminating, I honestly don't know where to go next. Because of the manner I have come across this evidence, I don't know if it can be used against your father. I have to talk this over with a district attorney and get his advice. I do know who I'll contact first thing in the morning, the FBI. They need to be brought in on this case immediately. There's plenty of evidence of kidnapping and trafficking. I do need to take this flash drive with me. Do you have a copy? Gerald nodded. I don't think you should be around your dad until this comes to a head. I don't want him picking up any vibes from you, and I certainly don't want you placing yourself in jeopardy. Deirdre could tell by the way his pupils dilated that the thought never occurred to him that his father might do him bodily harm. I suppose you're right, he mumbled. I never go home anyway, except for a few holidays. Darn him. Gerald turned his face away, trying to stem the tears that rolled down his cheeks. Chapter 20. Deirdre reached the top of Thompson Hill, where I-35 drops down to the city of Duluth. She pulled into the parking lot of an overlook and sat for a few minutes. The blue of the lake contrasted against the white snow made for a beautiful sight. Outside the harbor, three ships lay at anchor, and Deirdre could tell by their outlines they were Salties, ships that were built for ocean travel rather than Great Lake sailing. The thought struck her that one of them might be the Ishat, the ship due in harbor on December 10th, but then she decided probably not. That would mean a six-day layover, and every day a ship wasn't moving cost its owners thousands of dollars. She wondered where they were from and where they were headed. Deirdre reached for her phone and dialed the number of the Lake County Sheriff. Hi, this is Deirdre Johnson. Will you connect me to Sheriff D'Angelo, please? The phone rang twice. This is Sheriff D'Angelo. How can I help you? Jeff, this is Deirdre. Glad you were in to take my call. I've got some very interesting news concerning the case I'm working on, as well as that of the girl we found on Palisade Head. Deirdre went on to explain as briefly as she could what Gerald had shared with her about his father. Every once in a while, she heard Jeff mutter into the phone, and she thought she knew what he was thinking. I'm sitting in that rest area atop Thompson Hill, and I wanted to let you know I'm stopping at the FBI office to show them what's on this flash drive. I guess they'll take it from here, given the severity of what's been going on and the implication it has to human trafficking, let alone kidnapping, and the international involvement of the individuals. You have no choice but to notify them. In a way, I'll be glad to have them take over. A community as small as Silver Bay and a county department the size of mine is hardly set up to handle cases of this magnitude. Hope all goes well when you meet with them. Deirdre said goodbye and dialed Ben's number. Hey, she heard his familiar voice. I hope you're not calling to cancel for this weekend. I've told the girls and they are making a special surprise for you. They'd be disappointed if you can't make it. No, I'll be there. No problem on that front. However, I do have some big problems, work-related. I'm calling in the big guns on this case and need your help. I suppose I could have gone through a receptionist, but you'll provide a more direct line to the person I should see. She briefly explained why she was calling, and she heard Ben exhale. Sounds like you found the mother lode, he said. You're at the top of the hill? That means you can be in our building in 15 minutes. I'll have a meeting set up for you when you get here. Check in at the front desk, and the receptionist will tell you who you'll be meeting with. Will you stop in and see me before you leave? I-35 dropped almost 700 feet to the level of Lake Superior in about a mile, and as Deirdre drove down the steep grade, she could feel her ears pop because of the change in elevation. In minutes, she was at the bottom of the hill and driving near the slips of the harbor. Several ships were taking on cargo, and she couldn't help but wonder if there were people being smuggled aboard as well. The federal building, which housed the FBI offices, loomed over her like a granite castle. As she walked up its time-worn stairs, she wondered if this would be the end of her involvement in the case. If that were so, she'd be able to retreat to her cabin in the Superior National Forest, but she worried that, after this experience, she could never be content with its isolation again. Deirdre didn't have time to mull the idea in her head. The elevator had her to the sixth floor in seconds, and she stepped out into the reception area. After identifying herself, she was escorted to an office down one of the halls. Her guide knocked on an office door, and she heard a man's voice answer, "Come in." He stood and introduced himself as Zach Burton, district agent in charge of human trafficking. He offered Deirdre a seat and pulled up a chair diagonal from her. "Ben tells me you have in your possession some very incriminating evidence. How did it come to your attention?" Without disclosing too much of her personal history, Deirdre related in detail her initial conversation with Gerald Coulter, the attorney's son. Zach wanted to know why Gerald chose to contact her rather than the FBI. In the end, the story of her history with the Coulters was told, and the agent was satisfied that Gerald had selected the familiar rather than the FBI. Ben tells me you have a data storage device. Is there any reason you'd balk at sharing the information with me? The question irritated Deirdre. That was why she'd come to him, not to play hide and seek. Of course not, she answered rather sharply. I wanted to ask. Too often we're accused of bullying our way because of our backing. I certainly don't want you to think we're going to take what you have and push your agency aside. My goal is to work together with whoever is involved. Are there other agencies? Deirdre had difficulty not saying, let's just get to the point. But she answered, the Silver Bay Police Force is made up of one full-time officer and a part-time assistant. He's already relinquished authority to the BCA. Jeff D'Angelo is sheriff of Lake County. He was with me when we rescued a girl from her assailant, so he's involved. He's a good man, a team player who will be an asset to you if you allow him to be. Agent Burton smiled. So it'll be you, me, and Sheriff D'Angelo working together. Did you say his name is Jeff? He wrote the name on a pad. Show me what you have. Deirdre felt relieved to be getting to the heart of the matter. She wasn't convinced why Zach had questioned her about who was involved in the investigation to date, but his tone had been non-threatening. He placed a laptop computer on the table between them, booted it up, and Deirdre inserted the flash drive. The computer made the usual working sounds, and a message appeared on the screen among the choices, Open Files. She clicked on those words, and a menu of the files in the flash drive was displayed across the top of the screen. She opened the first file, the spreadsheet showing names of ships, their arrival and departure times, and what country's flag they flew. Deirdre explained to him that the list ended on a date that would roughly coincide with the last day of the shipping season. The locks at Sault Ste. Marie would close because of ice conditions, and the Salties, if they weren't out by that time, would be trapped until spring. The second file held little interest to the agent. He remarked that the judge was being paid for an undisclosed service, but there was no indication what that service was. He admitted it was a bit unusual for an attorney to have a record of payments to a sitting judge. However, that would be a matter for the State Bar Association to investigate. She closed that file and opened the third. Zach looked thoughtfully at the rows and columns. No doubt there's a correlation to when a certain ship was in the harbor and an amount of money that exchanged hands, a considerable amount of money. Once again, we can't ascertain for what reason the exchange took place. We can surmise, but that's about all. Deirdre was concerned about his dismissive tone. She opened the fourth and clicked on Anna's picture icon. The screen lit up with photos of her. Deirdre sat silently, waiting for a reaction. Is shot December 10. It doesn't take much imagination to tie this file into the others, does it? But a good lawyer would tear us to pieces with this as our only evidence. First, it was stolen from the attorney's personal computer. It doesn't matter that it was his son who committed the theft. Second, there's no direct link between the files other than they are on the same flash drive. If I were an attorney for the defense in this case, I would claim the files were downloaded from separate sources and placed in this sequence on this data storage device. And two, I'd link it to you and to the fact that you have a motive for framing the defendant. I'd even bring up the strained relationship between the son and his father. As for the pictures, I'd claim they should be considered privileged information, obtained from when my client was representing Mr. Leader. I'd claim they were really Leader's work and had been accessed by you during your investigation into his background. That'd be a stretch, I admit, but then I'd give the jury a more plausible explanation. I'd say my client had them on his computer from when he represented Leader in that juvenile sex case. I'd say my client wanted to examine them to decide whether Leader should plead guilty to a lesser charge. That's thin, I admit, but I would try to place doubt in the jurors' minds. Deirdre's shoulders slumped in anticipation of being dismissed. Zach continued, however, there's no doubt in my mind, or yours, I'm sure, that we have a large-scale human trafficking operation happening on the docks. We've known about it. Port security has known about it. The media knows about it. But until now, we've had few inroads. Now we do. What you have here is invaluable. Deirdre perked up. But with all the loopholes you pointed out to me, where do we go from here? For the first time, Zach laughed. We catch them. That's where we go. I'm going to download these files onto my computer. I want you to take this flash drive with you and share its contents with Sheriff D'Angelo. We're going to be attacking the situation on the docks, but I want him informed. It's only 15 miles from here to the southern edge of Lake County, and I want him ready for anything that spills his way. I plan to meet with our trafficking division tomorrow. I'll share with them what you've brought me and get back to you on Friday. Will you be available to meet with us that morning? I wouldn't miss it for the world, Deidre thought. Of course, she answered. She turned the wrong way, leaving his office, and walked the distance of the hallway before she realized her mistake. Backtracking, she walked past Zach's office. The door was open a crack, and she heard him on the phone, speaking to someone. Hi, Sammy. I'm calling about a ship, the Ishat, scheduled to arrive in port on December 10th. She didn't dare stop and eavesdrop on his conversation. She hoped he was on her side. Thursday morning, Deidre allowed herself some extra minutes to visit with Inga. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all you're doing for me. I'm just sorry I haven't been a good guest. I come in at all hours, sometimes not at all, and you're taking such good care of Pete. I think he's gained 5 pounds since he started his stay in your kennel. Inga patted her hand. Think nothing of it. It's nice to have something to do besides putter around the house. I do wish you'd take better care of yourself. Pete might have gained 5 pounds, but I think you've lost 10. You won't be good for anything if you run yourself into the ground. Here, have another karma roll. She pushed the plate toward Deidre, who eyed it for a second. Who could resist this treat? The women chatted a few more minutes. Deidre stood to leave. Tell you what, I should have a short day. Would you like to cook supper together tonight? I'll pick up groceries on the way home. Inga's eyes lit up, and she left no doubt that was what she'd like. Deidre was late getting to work, and when she walked through her office door, Jill, very pointedly, looked at her watch. Then she laughed. Good to see you relaxing a bit. How did your meeting go with Mr. Coulter? Did he have anything productive to offer? Some, Deidre evaded the question. Now about you. Did you come up with anything on those initials? Jill took a swig from the coffee cup on her desk. Locally, nothing. When I widened the search to the Arrowhead region, I still drew a blank. Next, I went statewide. There I had 2 hits. The first that came up was the Rochester Region Rowing Club. I think we can disregard them. They're a small group with no facility or set meeting place. They wouldn't have need for a key like you found. The second is the Red Rooster Restaurant in Belltown, Minnesota. It's a tiny village in the far southwest corner of the state. It's a mom-and-pop place, hardly a crew you'd suspect of being murderers. As you would expect, a national search turned up countless possibilities. So many, in fact, that I doubt it'll be helpful. I copied the list to your computer. You can wade through it if you really think it'll be of use. Deidre thanked her, not wanting to say that she had discovered a lead that would probably break the case wide open. I'm running upstairs to talk to Jeff. Be back soon. Mind the store while I'm gone. She sprang up the stairs to the top floor, taking 2 steps at a time. Fortunately, Jeff was in, and he welcomed her into his office. She walked out of his office an hour later, leaving Jeff shaking his head and being thankful someone else was leading the charge on this case. Jill was on her lunch break, but on her desk was a note. Call Zach Burton as soon as you get back. Deidre dialed his number, expecting the recorded message of an answering machine. Deidre, Zach answered excitedly. I've just come from a meeting with the division members. I want you to meet them tomorrow morning, if you can free up the time. We want to get your opinion on a plan we've drawn up. Also, they want to meet the person who did the footwork to give us our big break. Can you make it? Deidre was a little surprised. When she had first gone into law enforcement, the competition between agencies had been fierce. That seemed to be lessening, at least at the local level. A spirit of cooperation was evolving. I'll be there. What time? She made an entry into her phone's reminder function. For the first time in many days, Deidre was at a loss for something to do. She shuffled through some papers and considered calling the hospital to ask if Kimmy had shown any improvement. When she could find nothing more to occupy her time, she picked up her phone. Melissa, do you have time to talk? Her call was greeted with a friendly, Deidre, great to hear from you. We've been receiving your reports. Seems this is a tough one. Any new developments? She wanted to tell Melissa everything, but decided she better wait for the fallout to clear from her latest discovery. Nothing of any significance right now. I've alerted the FBI to the possibility we are dealing with the trafficking of young women. Other than that, it is pretty much status quo. I just wanted to hear your voice and let you know I'm on the job up here. I didn't realize this would be such a lonely job when I took it. Tell me, have Anna's parents been able to claim her body yet? Yes, Judy released it over a week ago, and the parents had her shipped back home, at considerable expense, I might add. The laws are tougher when it comes to transporting a body across the border than if a reprobate like that leader crosses with a passport. A testimony to our legislative leaders, if you ask me. The women chit-chatted for several minutes about nothing in particular, just two friends checking in with each other. Eventually, Melissa announced she had a meeting to attend, and Deidre apologized for monopolizing her time. Melissa told her to call anytime. The break from work might do both of them some good. Deidre finished her work, wrote Jill a note, and left it on her desk. "See you in the morning," it said. On her way out of the law enforcement center, she crossed the courthouse parking lot. As she neared her vehicle, she almost bumped into Gerald Coulter, the father of the young man who had given her the flash drive. "Good afternoon, counselor," she said with a nod. "Deidre," he said, and the two went their separate ways. That evening was as pleasant a time as Deidre had experienced since she moved back with Inga. They had a leisurely meal, cleaned the kitchen together, and sat in the living room, sipping tea. "I don't want to snoop," Inga began, "but do you have a man in your life?" Deidre laughed at her bluntness. "That's the last thing I need. For the first time since John's death, I feel like I'm in charge of my life. My decisions are my own, and I'm not reacting to loneliness or to a need to be with someone. No, I'm perfectly happy with my life the way it is." Inga swirled her cup and stared into it as if she were a gypsy tea leaf reader. She looked up, and Deidre could see a sense of longing in the older woman's eyes. "Don't close the door on another romance, my dear. I did that, thinking I would dishonor Eric's memory by being with another man. In my grief, I isolated myself, became an island. My decisions are my own, and I'm not reacting to loneliness or to a need to be with someone. No, I'm perfectly happy with my life the way it is." Inga swirled her cup and stared into it as if she were a gypsy tea leaf reader. She looked up, and Deidre could see a sense of longing in the older woman's eyes. "Don't close the door on another romance, my dear. I did that, thinking I would dishonor Eric's memory by being with another man. In my grief, I isolated myself, became an island. Now, in my later years, all I have left is to snoop on my neighbors, tend to my flowers, and hope that someone like you needs me. Don't close the door on happiness. You're too young to let it pass you by." Deidre said nothing. Inside, she knew Inga was speaking through the voice of experience and with wisdom, and she knew she wanted to have back the happiness she and John had shared. But she knew she was afraid to allow herself that kind of joy again. What she didn't have couldn't be taken from her.
You've been listening to episode 11 of A River Through Two Harbors by Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach. There will be a total of 20 episodes in this reading, so be sure to tune in next time for more from A River Through Two Harbors. If you miss an episode, you can find it on our website, ktwh.org, by clicking on Programs and then Literally from the North Shore on the drop-down list. Each weekend, we'll post the episodes for you to catch up on. To learn more about human trafficking in Minnesota, go to www.yourcallmn.org. Please join us again next time for A River Through Two Harbors, here on Literally from the North Shore.